about 2 or 3 weeks a studied campaign to get us to stop the bombing. We cannot find any justification. I think we would be very recreant to our duty, and would probably, if we did it just before their strike, would get the honor of being Boob of the Year. I have gone over it with all of our best people in charge of our military operations, and I just couldn't stay in office and say to the men that are standing there at the DMZ and all through the I Corps that I'm going to increase the weight you're carrying by 30% by taking away from you your most effective weapon. Now, I have gone over all this with the Vice President. I've told him that I don't have any voice over what he says or does, that he ought to take the position that he believes in. And if for some reason he doesn't believe in what we have done or what we're doing, or as a candidate he needs to change his position, he ought to feel at liberty, so far as I'm concerned, to do so. He ought to just take a position at this, I believe, and then stay with it. I told him, however, that he must not confuse Hanoi or our allies, both of whom are watching every move we make, with the feeling that he was speaking for anyone other than himself as a candidate and not as an administration spokesman. Now, the facts are, Dick, that we are anticipating an attack any time. We're trying to abort it. We consider it to be a most serious one. The North Vietnamese efforts to expand their military capabilities continue unabated. All the indicators of the movements are at very high levels. And the watercraft activity has reached a record level. We met on it most of today. And more than 1,200 watercraft were sighted south of the 19th parallel. And that is more than four times the weekly average since my speech of March 31st. The truck sightings were 25% above the weekly average since March the 31st. And the pilots' reports on trucks destroyed are 40% above the average. Now, I just could not, for a political reason, say to those men, and certainly some of my own sons, that I'm abandoned here in this hour because I've got a convention coming.
That satisfies me, Mr. President.
And General Eisenhower said today to the Republican that you must not do that. That's murder, but that would be mass murder by a commander-in-chief. And I'm shocked that the Vice President considered it for a moment. He told me it was pure politics, and that caused me to think a good deal less of him, because I just think a man that plays with human lives because of political things, it's just too dangerous. And he said, well, he just frankly had to shimmy. Well, I don't think he's ever going to get McCarthy. And I don't think that when Nixon is nominated, that will be confronted with as much pressure as he has now when they look at Nixon and Humphrey. But if he never carried a state, it would be terrible for me to say to Chuck Robb tonight, who has had the killings every day for 90 days, his company is less than half strength, that I'm going to pull the air cover off of you. And tomorrow, instead of facing 70 trucks, you'll face an extra 30. General Wheeler talked to me late into the night about it, and he was shocked at the vice president's proposal. And I'm afraid these professors are just getting him off. Now, we have agreed with the Soviet Union that if they would give us assurance that this traffic would not be increased and speeded up, and they would not take advantage of our men, that we would be glad to let them underwrite it. We've also said to Hanoi that if you will close your infiltration and not accelerate it, that we will be glad to do it. But in neither, they want something for nothing, and that I will not give them.
I don't blame you, Mr. President. I'm completely satisfied about this. I just was thinking about the possibility of a substitute for saturation bombing of the northern part of South Vietnam, if that would close them off. But if it's not militarily possible, and you've got these men's lives on your conscience, sir, I'm completely satisfied, and I withdraw the suggestion.
God bless you, Dick.
I'm just worried about the outcome of that. Unless a new look, unless this man gets a new look, something here. Now, for instance, these people are just literally raising hell up here. They're strange-looking people. They're young people. Some of them have got beards on. They're intellectuals. They're the people that we just can't carry this state unless there's some little new, some new twist.
I think when they find out, I may be wrong, and we may be too optimistic, but, I'll just read you a very secret telegram from Abrams to Wheeler today. I believe the enemy realizes the units in the region around Saigon cannot threaten this city, and if he is to get his psychological effect, he must use his divisions against Saigon. My reasons for these views are these. The so-called regiments are weak. They have been hurt. They have never had more than loose control. The May 5th offensive in which he used the 9th Division must have showed the enemy that he needed more troops. Our defenses around Saigon are better. We know from agent reports the enemy is having great difficulty infiltrating men to Saigon. He's going to be hard put to sneak in, and thus he must attempt to fight his way in with his big units. We have a report from an agent today which states the 9th Division will attack Tekin City in the near future. What is significant is the 9th is to attack from the west. The 5th Division is to block the southeast. Only the local units are to attempt to seize the town. Thus, the divisions have in reality secondary roles. Our present evidence, we're inclined to view the attacks on the capital as preliminary and diversionary. I'm concerned about the enemy buildup southwest of Da Nang. Now, that's where Chuck Robb is. 20. Yesterday, he lost 19 of our men and 50 wounded, and we got 5 of theirs. That's how tough it is. Here the enemy is beginning to get ready for major attack on that city. Now that's where they're coming through in the north end. That's right up the DMZ. Well, I'm less troubled about the enemy situation in Quang Tri than I am Bay Mot. They require close watching. Overall, it looks like the enemy is going to make a major attack around the middle of August, and we are planning to anticipate him with a comparable counter effort. Along the same line, a message which I sent out to all our commanders is quoted in part. I intend to accommodate the enemy in seeking battle and to anticipate him where possible. If his new offensive is of critical importance to him, it is equally critical importance to all of us. We cannot be forced into a position of merely reacting. We must anticipate him. We must fix his major forces as far away as possible from our vital areas, and we must defeat him. His apparent offensive intent gives us a chance to strike him a crushing blow. To do so will require an all-out effort by all hands. And I want all hands to get this message. And then he goes on and says, the one unforgivable sin will be to gloss over or ignore shortcomings which demand remedy. This cannot be tolerated from any U.S. commander. We must concentrate every last element of available combat power on the enemy wherever we can find it. You have the resources, and we have additional combat air power to support your resources. I'm therefore directing air forces to maintain a flexible posture, quickly responsive to all your requirements for air support. I've reviewed the informant, and I am prepared to add to its weight to the decisive battle. The commanders who find, fix, and engage the enemy will be the ones who get the first priority. I'm confident we'll repulse these next enemy attacks, even if they're heavier than the last. But we must do more than repulse them. We must defeat his forces, then we must pursue him, and then we must destroy him. I intend to show a copy of this message to General Van. The result I'm looking for is a conscious, determined effort by all Allied forces to seek battle and a will to win it. Now, Dick, the way I see this, this government is in great danger, as the world is in great danger. I believe the communist international conspiracy is at work every hour. The Soviet Union, Kosygin wrote me 2 or 3 weeks ago and demanded that we stop the bombing in return for nothing. We wrote him back and told him we'd be glad to stop the bombing if he would give us assurance it wouldn't wipe out our men. But no commander-in-chief could take the gun away from his men while other folks assaulted him.
You're right.
Then he went to India and he put the same pressure on. Then he came to our two networks in this country and they started putting the pressure on. Then he got his 2 or 3 spokesmen in the Senate, like McCarthy and this damn little Stephen Young, who has speeches every day on the subject. Then he got Javits and Mr. Javits and Mr. Morton and Mr. Hatfield, and they made speeches. Then the next thing I knew, the professors came in and got it in the vice president's speech. Then the next thing I knew, they started going to the civilians in the State Department. And all this load has come on me a matter of hours before a deadly struggle. And what they're asking me to do is to be the biggest boob of our time. Just as the communists get ready to hit us, they want me to do what I did at Tet. Take her vacation, let our men accept a Tet to holiday, and as I do it and call off my bombing, let them hit me full length. And I just don't see it, and Rusk doesn't see it. He covered it full in his press conference today. And although, God, I want to be a hero, and I want to get the war over, and I've got 2 boys in it, and both of them in combat every day, and one of them has lost over half of his men, I just can't do any more than I'm doing that I know of.
Mr. President, number one, I'm satisfied. Number two, I withdraw the letter. Number two, God bless you. You stay with us.
Goodbye.
Thank you, sir.